Making After School Cool.
Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those who are interested in the activities youth are engaged with during non-school hours. The Making After School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Mike Wilson. Everyone has unique characteristics, which is why we refer to people as individuals. Some of these characteristics are obvious, while others become apparent over time. However, when it comes to kids, the unseen elements which makes a child unique can initially be problematic for the adults who care for them. In the new movie version of Jumanji, once the characters assumed the traits of their avatar, a thought bubble appeared, which listed their strengths and weaknesses. It would be nice if kids had such a thing pop up so that adults could easily see why they respond to some things appropriately and other situations they struggle. But that's not the case. As it relates to school, a difficulty that is common among students occurs when the child appears to put off starting, finishing, or even turning in classwork. Their actions are often viewed as negligence or laziness of the student. In some circumstances, a child has an outburst or is totally frustrated and can't seem to control themselves for no apparent reason. The problem might not be just their behavior. It could be more severe, involving the students having difficulty to self-regulate. To discuss strategies to address underlying deficits in emotional and sensory regulation, executive functioning, and social cognition is my guest, Elizabeth Sauter. Elizabeth is a licensed speech and language pathologist, and since 1996 has worked with preschool to adult clients and their families in private practice, schools, and hospitals. She is an expert in the field of supporting those with social, self-regulation, and executive functioning challenges. Elizabeth has also co-authored two popular children's books with Christine Wilson and has published Make Social Learning Stick, How to Guide and Nurture Social Competency Through Everyday Routines and Activities, which provides teachable moments adults can use in the home and community to practice with kids on building social and emotional skills. In her blog, Make Social Learning Stick, she shares her own parenting and life experiences raising two boys. Elizabeth, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start off with the question, what motivated you to originally start the Make Social and Emotional Learning Stick blog series and the training series?
So I became interested in autism and behaviors actually during grad school. And then afterwards, I worked at a school with severely impaired children with autism behaviors, at a school where the children were lucky to have a school like that. It's a non-public school where these are the kids who used to be institutionalized because they couldn't, their behaviors were so extreme, they couldn't manage them in a public school setting. And so the school is called Spectrum Center, and it was built on the foundation of behavior is communication. And then I learned about the work of Michelle Garcia Winner. She does a lot of social thinking, which is really more of the higher functioning kids with autism and perspective taking challenges, and not just thinking about skills, but also thinking about the thinking behind the skills. And so teaching that theory of mind, or what it means to like take perspective or step into somebody's shoes. You know, what I think about when I think about working one-on-one with students, you know, especially as a speech pathologist, I only get to see them for about a half an hour a week. And you really can't leave this type of work. You know, you see them either one-on-one in a small group or whatnot, and they're learning all these skills and practicing in a fun way, but then they go home. And, you know, so the carryover and the generalization has to happen in the natural environment. So you just can't leave the knowledge and the training and the practice on the shoulders of these kids. It has to be given to the parents. So in our social group, in our program, we would always train parents about, you know, this is what we worked on today. Say it was flexibility and flexible thinking and whatnot. This is how you could do it at home. So the parents said to me, you should start blogging and maybe writing. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that, but I just started doing it. And I am really passionate about helping families and parents, because you really can't just, you know, a whole child means whole family, and whole family means caregivers included. So we do a lot of this training at the schools, but the parents are often left out of the picture. So that's just what inspired me to put all these activities into a blog and a book. And now I have a couple of card decks coming out too, because I do feel like the parents are often left out of the picture.
So what makes your work with Make Social Learning so unique?
So I have, like I mentioned, I have Communication Works, which is, that's where we had this, we used to have a center in Oakland, California, and now we're a group of speech pathologists working in the schools primarily. And with that company, I see private clients and parent consulting for children, teens, and adults. I actually work with some young adults now. And then I do a lot of consulting and training in the schools. And then our therapists are in the schools as well, because a lot of our schools out here don't have speech therapists. And so, and also too, speech therapists also often feel isolated. And so we do a lot of support and care for them so that they can do their job, because it's a, you know, it's a lot, you know, in education in general, but they have big caseloads and it's a lot to manage. And then the other part of it is it's kind of my passion project, which is the Make Social Learning Stick. That's a website that I have, and that's the book, and then I do trainings, and now I have a second edition of my book coming out, and I've also developed a course with Dr. Rebecca Brandstetter, so that parents can have access to it even if they don't have access to me directly, although we do provide 4 quarterly group coaching calls as they're going through the self-paced course online. You know, there's so much out there for us as educators and therapists and counselors to get continuing education and knowledge and how to support their kids, our kids that we're supporting, because, you know, it's our job, so we have to get trained. And that's what we have to do for our profession, is keep up our continuing education. But there is no handbook or guidebook for parents, especially for any kind of parenting. It's just, there's no handbook for it. And so, but there are a lot, like I said, of universal brain-based strategies that can help. And so it's just been my motivation to share that with parents in a very simple way, because I don't want them to feel like they have to learn a whole new curriculum or go to conferences or whatnot. Parents are busy enough, especially these days. And so it's not meant to be an add-on, but more of an add-in is what my mission is show parents how they can do these simple strategies through everyday routines and activities, so it doesn't feel like more on their already busy plate.
My next question is very personal for you. The types of services and resources you provide was not available when you had your children. Since you've personally experienced what it's like to have family members needing additional support, what advice would you give other families and caregivers who may be facing the same types of challenges?
Well, I grew up in a family, my sister with an older sister who's developmentally delayed, and back then didn't have inclusion, so she was in the special day class in the portables, is what we call them. So I know what that's like as a family member as well. It can be really stressful. And then my cousin has a son. He was the first of our generation to be born, and he was delayed, and I helped with getting him diagnosed with autism and getting him the sports that he needs. And then as my children were born, I have 2 boys. My oldest was really charismatic. You know, I like to think about it in a positive way, right? And then, you know, getting into school, he was the one was, you know, name on the board, getting benched. And so, you know, I was watching him and his development, and, you know, around 3rd grade, when it turns into, you know, changing from learning to read to reading to learn, I noticed that he was really struggling to focus and attend. And so that's when we got him, you know, assessed and tried to figure out what was going on. And it turns out that he has combined type ADHD, learning disabilities, and anxiety. And so, you know, I've always been a big advocate for supporting parents and what they need in their natural environment at home, and not trying to make it extra stressful for them, and help them accept their child for their differences and look for the lessons in life and all of that. But, you know, of course, then I have my own child, and it's different when you're consulting with somebody versus managing it yourself. And so that took me for a curveball there quite a bit. And so, you know, and he's super high functioning and bright, but he has challenges big time with executive functioning and impulse control and emotional regulation and anxiety. So just trying to figure out what his needs were and advocating for that took me down a path of just, you know, managing my own mental health and really upping the game when it came to self-care and self-compassion. And so that's the message that I want to give to parents who are managing you know, extra stress with supporting their children, because you're really, you're only, what do they say, you're only happy as your most miserable child. And I'm not saying that he was miserable by any means, but he was struggling in a lot of ways. And that just impacts, you know, my life, my marriage, my house, you know, everything, and my younger son too. So it's been a journey, and it's really brought on an extra level of compassion for the parents that I work with, and for my purpose of why I'm here. It's not just a profession, it's a life endeavor.
I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and your journey with your sister, your cousin, as well as your own kids in regards with people with special needs. I think your testimony will be helpful for other families going through similar situations. Which leads me to my next question. How can parents, caregivers, and even after-school staff who work with kids help these kids overcome negative taunts that they may hear from their peers?
Yeah, so that's a big one, right? I mean, I think that, like, as we are just developing as a culture and a world, I'm hoping that we can all just open our eyes to neurodiversity. And, you know, we're working so hard now on biases for cultural and racial issues, and I'm hoping that can include disability as well, in thinking about opening up the way that we see these children, and that these are going to be the world changers in the world. And so I just try to focus on strengths in our course and the work that I do. It's always strengths-based approach. And then also being able to express that to the people that I'm around. So, you know, when I talk about my son, like I said, he's, you know, can be really annoying to some people, but I look at that and I say, like, boy, is he charismatic? Look at that energy. And, you know, trying to just see it in a light that is going to bring positivity towards him and build up his strengths and his self-confidence. And also so the world can see him that way too, because he's going to be something amazing. He's got so much empathy, and we're actually both doing a presentation together, and he's come up with this whole, it takes ripples to make waves, social emotional learning from bottom up, the bottom up approach. So he's really embraced his differences and how his brain is wired, and he wants to help others. And so I just invite other parents and other professionals to look at kids in a light of positivity. And also just remembering that kids are not giving us a hard time, they're having a hard time. So leaning in with curiosity and empathy and positivity and focusing on their strengths.
I love the fact that you use vocabulary to describe certain things, because I think sometimes people don't do things just because they don't know how. And it's easy to stereotype and label, and then you're talking to your peers, and then all of a sudden, you know, young people have to deal with these labeling that somebody else may have shared with another person. And then now that other person comes in contact with the youth, and they already have their preconceived ideas of what the child is.
Now, you previously mentioned the term bottom-up and top-down approach to social-emotional learning. Can you explain this theory?
Basically, how I think about it is there's bottom-up approach when you're thinking about the way that you're regulating yourself. So when my second edition of my book, Make Social, and I added an emotional learning stick, which is coming out here really soon. I'm excited for it. And two card decks, but I added the emotions in there because social and emotional are really, they go hand in hand. So if you're emotionally dysregulated, then you're not going to be able to be comfortable and think about the situation around you. And then of course the social aspect around you affects how you feel emotionally. So when we think about understanding our emotions in terms of a bottom-up approach, it's looking at understanding our sensations, how we're feeling internally, like maybe you have a little bit of a pit in your stomach. What is that? And a lot of our kids actually, it's called interoception, sensory processing disorder, where our inner organs tell us how we're feeling. And some people have a hypersensitive, where they are having a hard time determining what those sensations are. Either they're too strong or they're not strong enough. And so we want our children and people to be able to be aware of those so we can identify those. Okay, well, it's, you know, it's the nervous energy that means I'm nervous. It's okay to be nervous. I don't really need to manage that. But if they, if it's a situation where, you know, they're just sitting in class and they're feeling nervous, then they might need to do some deep breathing or calm themselves down. So the bottom-up approach has to do with understanding your emotions from a bottom-up body sense approach. And then being able to think about the situation at hand. Top down is more of the thinking piece of it. So that's like the being able to look around and think about what's going on around you, knowing what social skills to use in those situations, having that self-talk, that metacognition of you know, everything's going to be okay. I've done this before, I can wait, all those things. That's the thinking piece of it. And so really having that combined bottom-up, top-down approach is what we want to be teaching, because there's, and figuring out where a child might be lagging. Maybe they're fine with the bottom-up approach and understanding sensations in themselves, and then, but maybe they struggle to understand perspectives or thinking about other people, and that's more of a cognitive-based approach. So I teach a lot on the bottom-up and top-down approach, and I think that there's validity in doing both and making sure that you're addressing both with a mindful approach to the bottom-up and then also a cognitive approach to the top-down.
So you're about to release the second edition of your book. When will it be available, and how can people have access to it?
So the book is... it's the Make Social Emotional Learning Stick, Practical Activities to Help Your Child Manage Emotions, Navigate Social Situations, and Reduce Anxiety. So the book is divided up into home, community, and holidays and special events. And then there is a piece on bridging home and school. And so within here, you know, educators and teachers and counselors can be teaching, they can, you know, photocopy a page and give it to the parents to work at home, but they can also look in here and think about activities that they could do when in after school programs. It's all context based. So when I said it's home, community, holidays, and special events, and bridging home and school, you can't see the book right now, but each page has all the different activities that we do with our children in natural routines and activities. Like in the home section, there is, page called Talent Wanted, which has all things to do with like a comic relief. So having like a little activity where you are making each other laugh, or there's, you know, starting a band where they can practice doing music together. There's two pages on arts and crafts. And one of the activities is to, you know, do a drawing that's like a comic where they have, like you were talking in the beginning about thought bubbles and talking bubbles. And so they can then make the implicit more explicit and to be able to think about what the thoughts are of the people that they're drawing, because that's all perspective taking and interaction. So there's so much that can be done in activities in after school and during the school. So absolutely, I would, it's geared towards parents for the home environment and what parents are going through on their daily lives. But educators have used it a lot for the activities that are in there, and then they've shared it with the parents, because obviously, if the parents are on board, then we know that there's research that the bridging of the both is what builds the acquisition overall.
So you're about to release the second edition of your book. When will it be available, and how can people have access to it?
So it's November 10th is the release date. I figured it needed to be, we needed some social emotional learning after the election for sure. and then also, it's the week of my sister's birthday. So as I mentioned, she's developmentally delayed. And so Amy's birthday is November 12th, and I'm dedicating it to her. I have a Facebook group for the launch party. And then I also, if you follow on Make Social Learning Stick there and subscribe to my newsletter, I have a ton of resources and free stuff on my newsletter or my website as it is right now. A calendar download, a free parent training, all kinds of schedules and things for parents. So hop on over there and just get on my newsletter and you'll hear all about it.
My final question is, how do you balance doing this type of work professionally while still being able to support your family?
Oh, yes, that's one of my favorite questions, because I am so passionate about supporting the well-being of parents. And I want to include educators in this as well, this little pep talk here, because, you know, we all adults, as we are supporting kids with social emotional learning, mental health challenges, whatever it might be, we have to take care of ourselves. It's not, some people say self-care is selfish. It's not, it's essential. We have to be focusing on self-care, and not just self-care. And what I mean by self-care is, you know, like going out and getting enough sleep and exercising and eating healthy and all the brain stuff that's needed. But not just that, it's also self-compassion. Because if we're taking our bubble bath or going for a walk and beating ourselves up about, you know, how we interacted with the student or our child, then that's not self-care. So thinking about how we could talk about ourselves as our own, talk to ourselves like we would our own best friend or somebody we love dearly, we would never be beating somebody else up. So don't do that to yourself either. And again, it's just, it has to come first. You know, if we don't have water in our pitcher, we cannot pour in the cups of the kids around us. So make sure to fill up your water every day as a part of taking care of yourself and taking care of these children.
Cool. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being my guest on this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast, and for sharing with our listeners to never forget self-care and self-love. As always, I want to thank our listeners for joining us for this episode, where our topic focused on strategies to address underlying deficits in emotional and sensory regulation and executive functioning. Please join us for future broadcasts as we continue to explore topics relevant in the out-of-school time field.